Okay. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our shiur. This will be the last shiur before Pesach, as I will not be here next Sunday. So I thought it would be a good idea to try to cover some of the basic concepts involved in preparing for Pesach. It could be that a lot of what I'm going to say is known, but sometimes you have to just sort of put it together conceptually to understand what exactly is involved in the preparation for Pesach, which obviously is a large undertaking. And if we appreciate why it's done and what's in terms of what mitzvahs are involved, I think it gives everything a little bit more of a meaning. So what I would like to start out with is discussing the mitzvahs and the halachos pertaining to preparing for Pesach. And that is, we know that when it comes to chametz, which is, as we know, a chemical reaction, chametz is fermentation of grain, that it can only, the Chazal had a Kabbalah from Har Sinai that chametz can only take place with five species of grain. Chamesh Shmini Dagon are the only five items that can turn into chametz. Other things cannot, even though they're also susceptible to some degree of fermentation. So therefore things like corn and rice and things like that are not. There is an opinion in the Mishnah that rice could also turn into chametz, but the accepted Kabbalah that we have is that only the five grains, being wheat, rye, oats, spelt, and barley, those five can turn into chametz. And the flip side of that is that those five are the only five species that are acceptable to be made into matzah. In other words, the Gemara tells us that only that which can become chametz can be used for matzah. The difference between chametz and matzah is the way in which it is prepared. As we know, matzah is made of the same ingredients, just that the dough was not allowed to rise. The dough was kept without rising, and thus you have the matzah. In our times, due to the length of the Golus, there has been a lack of expertise in making matzah. Through the generations, the art of making matzah was lost. And thus we find that the Gemara tells us that matzah really can be up to a tefach in thickness. A tefach is held to be between 3 and 4 inches. And the Gemara says that it is possible to make matzah that would resemble what we call a pita or a lafa, things like that, and that would have been acceptable as matzah. In fact, that was the case in the time, the earlier generations. They knew how to do it. And, for example, the Chazal tell us that the lechem haponim, the showbread that was every week that appeared on the shulchan in the Mishkan and in the Beis HaMikdash, the showbread, which you perhaps have seen diagrams of what it looked like, it resembled at least a uniquely shaped loaf of bread. So we are told that the lechem haponim could not be made chametz. They had to be made matzah. Now to us, that is absolutely inconceivable. How could you have such a thing? How could you have something that resembles, that has any height to it, that has been allowed to rise even a minimal amount? But that's because over the length of the long, long goals, the expertise in making matzahs has gone from us. And therefore, with the exception of a few Sephardic communities which claim to have a tradition that they still know how to do it the old way, and therefore they are capable of producing matzahs that are thicker, but we make very, very thin matzahs, and in fact it's considered mehudar, it's considered preferable to make very thin matzahs, the thinner the better, all the while realizing that this was not the way it originally was. Now if a person wants to appreciate the goals, we live in very comfortable, Baruch Hashem, we live in very comfortable situation here in America and many other places in the goals today. But you say, so what are we missing? So we're missing a lot. But one of the things, every time it comes Pesach, you could appreciate when you sit down to eat the korech sandwich and you say, who in the world thought of such an idea to eat a sandwich like this? And even though it's true that you know, in the view of Hillel, that's the way the Torah said matzah and maror was to be eaten together, but how could you make a sandwich? So you just have to remind yourself that it didn't look that way in Hillel's time. It looked more like what we would consider a sandwich, more like a pita type of thing that was softer and able to be used as a wrap. But today we don't have this. We are left with the crumbly, thin matzah, and that's what we have. So anyway, that is the matzah that we have this manazeh. Now when it comes to chametz, so again, returning to the five grains, so we are told the Kabbalah that the five grains have the ability to turn into chametz. As such, the Torah goes ahead and prescribes three surim. There are three prohibitions when it comes to chametz. And the three prohibitions are A, achila, meaning a person not allowed to eat them, not allowed to eat chametz. B, a person is not allowed to get hanoah, person not allowed to get benefit from chametz, even if a person does not eat it, and even if a person does not own it. And C, a person is not allowed to own chametz, even if the chametz is not in his domain, even if the chametz is not in his possession. Okay, so these are the three surim of chametz. They are all derived from psukim. As far as the Isser Achil, if you look here on the sheet, the Isser Achil is mentioned in several psukim, but on the bottom of page 1, you have, for example, the Torah tells us here in Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Tesvav, in the middle of the Pasuk, Kichal Ochel Chametz V'nichrusa Nefshahim Yisrael, that a person who eats chametz is liable to the punishment of Karetz. Chametz is in what considered one of the Isurim that are very chomer. It's considered one of the severe prohibitions in the Torah, and as such, it carries with it an Isur Chametz. However, Isur Karetz. However, contrary to what people think, or sometimes think, the Isur of Karetz only applies to the prohibition of eating Chametz. However, getting Hanah from Chametz or having Chametz in your possession is a lav, that's an Isur in the Torah, but that is not liable to Karetz. So there we have the pasuk for achila. As far as hanor goes, so it's found in the Gemara, but it was easier. I just copied it out of the Rambam. The Rambam says in the beginning of the Hilchos Chametz Matzah, halacha beis, he says, a chametz pesach asur b'hanor, shenema lo yeyochel chametz. The Torah says lo yeyochel chametz, doesn't just say that you should not eat chametz, but it says chametz should not be eaten. To which the Chazal had the Kabbalah that this should be interpreted lo yehei bo heter achilus, that you should not only shouldn't you eat it, but you shouldn't even be allowed to do the thing that brings you to eating it. You shouldn't be allowed to derive any sort of use from it, any sort of benefit from it, not just the eating itself. So therefore, you have the Isser of Hanah, and finally, we have the third prohibition, which is the well-known. It's actually two sukkim, right? But they both point to the same thing, and that is that if you go back to page 1, on the top, the Torah says in the very first pasuk, it says matzah yochel. That was matzah yochel shivas hayom, and matzah should be eaten for 7 days. And you should not, it should not be seen to you chametz in your, or sourdough, sa'ar, in your domain. Now, literally, that means, lo yirochem would sound like it means you can't see chametz. But we know that that's not what it means. We'll get to this in a second. Okay, if you turn over the page to page 2, we also find another pasuk, which says that, the pasuk tells us here in pasuk Yotes, Shivas yamim se'or lo yimotze bevatechem, that for 7 days sourdough or chametz should not be found in your houses. So thus we have two psukim which the Chazal interpreted to mean the prohibition of ownership of chametz. In other words, even though the pasuk says chametz should not be seen in one pasuk, and in the second place it says chametz should not be found, but the Kabbalah that the Chazal had was that this doesn't mean literally that you can't see chametz. In other words, for example, if that were true, that would mean that if you walk in the street and you pass by a bakery, you would have to close your eyes, right? Or anything of that nature. That's not true. We know that that's not true. But rather, what the Torah means is that you're not allowed to own chametz. You're not allowed to have chametz in your ownership. Why then did the Torah not just come out and say that? Why did the Torah say it in this indirect manner. So the Mefarshim tell us that that's because there are types of ownership that people would not necessarily consider ownership that the Torah prohibits. In other words, the prohibition goes beyond what is typically considered ownership, meaning even a partial ownership, even if chametz was taken as a collateral, right? We have the halacha that if a person took chametz as a collateral against a debt, so he doesn't own that chametz, not his, but nevertheless, even that's prohibited on Pesach. If a person had such a collateral, he would have to get rid of it before Pesach. So therefore, the Torah said it in this unusual manner. The Torah said, to tell us that it cannot be owned in any which way. Okay, so basically, these are the three prohibitions that we have of chametz, and they're all mitzvahs los haseh. Okay, you're not allowed to eat chametz, that's the most severe. You're not allowed to get benefit from chametz, you're not allowed to own chametz. Okay, now, before we get to the main point I wanted to bring out, we just have to understand that in this regard, when it comes to the having chametz in your possession, so there is a drasha, a very, very important drasha that was made by the Chazal, that the Torah says, the pasuk which we quoted earlier, v'lo yeroy lecha chametz, that you should not, chametz should not be seen by you, that was on the top of page 1, to which the Gemara makes a very important drasha, which is, shelcha i'ataroa, that you're not allowed to see, you're not allowed to have your own chametz, aval ataroa shel acherim v'shel gavoa, but someone else's chametz, you're allowed to have, and you're allowed to see. Meaning that this, as I said, the prohibition of Bal Yeroh, what we call Bal Yeroh, Bal Yematzeh, which is the main reason why we clean our houses for Pesach, which is the concern that you're going to have chametz in your possession. So that prohibition really only applies if you own the chametz. If you don't own the chametz, so then the fact that there is chametz in your house is not a problem. Theoretically, okay, that because it has to be lo yiro lecha, it has to be your chametz. And thus, if the chametz was owned by somebody else, so then the prohibition would not really apply, provided that it was not in your in any way in your place, in your possession. In other words, actually, let me qualify that. In other words, basically, it would come out that even if it was in your house, but it would not be a problem because of the fact that it's owned by somebody else. That is the way, theoretically, it should be. Okay? So that is the drasha that was made. Based on this drasha, the Chazal said that the only problem of Bal Yiroh Bal Yematzeh is ownership. Therefore, a person, even though the Torah says should not be seen by you chametz, but that's not to be taken literally. And therefore, a person is allowed to look at, as I said, a person is allowed to look at chametz on Pesach, if you, obviously not in your own house, you shouldn't be in your own house, we'll soon see, but a person going in the street and sees chametz allowed to look at it. There's no isser like that. Okay, when it comes to the isser of hanor, I just want to clarify that the isser of benefiting from chametz means many different things. It means that all types of hanor, any type of benefit that a person can get, is prohibited on Pesach, meaning that a person is not allowed to use chametz if it will benefit him physically. Like, for example, this we have the issue of certain types of cosmetics and things like that, the personal items which could have chametz in them, even though you're not going to say, I'm not going to eat it, so what's the problem? Right? So the problem is, one problem is that the isser of hanah, that you're deriving a benefit. The other problem would be that if in fact it's chametz and you own it, so then it's in your possession. So the second and third isurim would apply in such a case. Okay, similarly, yeah.
So how do you have the
Kivei Achilas Kelev, yeah, so that's because it's considered, in other words, chametz processed or has been ruined to the point that it's Nifsad Me'achilas Kelev, so we have a Kabbalah that all Isurim that have reached that point lose their status. In other words, it's not just true by chametz, that's true by the tarfus also, right, that if it's Nifsad Me'achilas Kelev, then the Isser goes off. Okay, now, other examples where a person can't get hanor from chametz would be, and this is not so widely realized, that, as I said, if you walk past a bakery, let's say a non-Jewish bakery on Pesach, so you're allowed to look at what they have even though it's chametz. However, what happens if there's a very pleasant aroma that comes out from that bakery? Right? So, which happens often. So for a person to take that aroma, to stand there and say, ah, so geschmack, what a good smell, that you can't do. That a person can't do on Pesach, because of the fact that that would be hanoah from chametz. You don't often realize this. You walk past an eatery, you walk past a non-Jewish establishment, and you have that good smell. So here's where it takes a little effort. You have to just walk by and don't stand there and enjoy yourself, because that would be an example of hanoah from chametz. It's not so well known. And another common example of hanoah from chametz would be feeding animals. Okay, feeding animals, an issue of hanoah, you're deriving benefit. The Chazal say that the Isser hanoah applies even if it's not your own animal. Even you'll say, well, what do I gain? This is not my dog, it's not my cat, it's not my fish, it's not whatever it is. But it doesn't matter, because the hanoah, the good feeling that a person gets from feeding an animal is considered in this regard hanoah. And thus, the common Chol Hamoed trip that parents take their children to the zoo, and they have, sometimes you can get up close to the animals and they have feed there you could buy for 25 cents or whatever. You have to know that that's not chametz. Because if it's chametz and you're buying it, so first of all, if you're buying it, that's a problem right there, because now you own chametz. And then if you feed it to the animal, you have an Isser Hanoah. So in that situation, the person just has to, keep in mind what's involved. Yes, guys.
Has
material help for? I'm gonna get to that right.
In other words, if I sell my animals, but I'm the fact that
someone
ultimately that I'm gonna get these.
Right, no. So you have to feed them feed that's not kosher peso. When you sell your animal to a guy, you say?
Yeah, that's one of the eggs.
Right. So then you're not getting hanoah on Pesach. What's the hanoah? On Pesach, the guy owns it, he's feeding it. After Pesach, you got a nice, robust animal, that's all right, because you're not deriving hanoah on Pesach. You're deriving the hanoah after Pesach.
Even if you don't,
someone else's animal you can't feed, right? You can't feed someone else's animal, but a guy can feed his own animal. If you sold your cow to a guy and the guy feeds his chametz on Pesach, that's not your problem, right? Yeah, I'm sorry.
The modern country safari actually will sell you romaine lettuce to feel it.
Oh, is that right?
The giraffe.
Right. They check it for bugs. Right. Okay, dip it in charosis and hand it to the hydroponic. Okay, so yeah.
It's like $3,000.
Yeah. That's it. Okay, right. Okay, so these are the prohibitions of hanoah. Now, getting back to ownership, getting back to Bal Yirah, Bal Yimatze, that a person cannot own chametz, so a person just has to bear in mind that this includes the following scenarios. The most common is chametz that you own, that you have in your house. However, if you own chametz and you don't have it in your house, that's also a problem. In other words, even though the Torah says, lo yimatze b'vateichem, that you shouldn't find it in your house, but that was not taken to be exclusive, because it also says that chametz should not be seen by you. So therefore, that means that it can't be in your possession no matter where it is. So simply owning chametz and having it somewhere else is not good enough. And similarly, if a person is in a partnership with a guy, so if he is a partner in the business, even if he says, well, okay, I won't come into the store. A person owns, let's say, a grocery store. Person owns the supermarket on Pesach together with a guy. So he says, all right, so for this week, I'm not going to come in. That doesn't help, because you own all the chametz. So at least the partnership. So therefore, a mechiras chametz has to be arranged in such a way. It's not a simple matter, but you have to go to the Rav, knows what he's doing, to make it that for that week, the guy is the exclusive owner of that chametz. Okay, so anything that a Jew owns, even if it's on the guy's property, and conversely, even if it's owned by a guy, but the Jew takes responsibility for it, there is a question if a Jew insures the chametz of a guy, so that could also be a shaila. If that situation comes up, person has to find out, speak to a Rav to find out what to do. But any situation like that, is a problem. Okay, now, an additional problem is that even if it's owned by a guy, but if a Jew stores it in his place, if a Jew stores it and he says, you can keep it by me, that's also a problem. So therefore, if a Jew owns a warehouse, and you say during that warehouse, well, you know, I allow people to come in and leave their chametz there, that could also be a problem. So you'll say, one minute, but how could that be? We all do mechiras chametz, and we leave the chametz in our house. So the answer to that is, because if you ever read the fine print in the Shtar Mechiras Chametz, it says that not only am I selling you the chametz, but I am selling you the place in which I'm renting to you the place in which the chametz is located. Okay, so therefore technically, if you have chametz in your house, which you sold to a non-Jew, and you keep it in a box, or you keep it in a certain cabinet that you have all locked up, that cabinet is the possession of the non-Jew. It has to be done that way. Right? This is why, in general, it's never advisable for a person to do their own mechiras chametz. Right? Sometimes they're like, oh, I should go to the rabbi, you know, I'll just do it myself, I'll go to, you know, my next door neighbor and I'll deal with it. It's not a good idea, because there are a lot of details in the laws of chametz and the laws of mechiras chametz, which we once spoke about, that the average person not familiar with. What kinyanim work by a guy? Not every kinyan that works by a Jew works by a non-Jew. And therefore, you really have to know what you're doing. So it's, for that reason, it's always advisable just go to the rabbi and let him take care of it. Okay, the procedure that's used by the rabbanim has been established for many, many years, and the shtar is very comprehensive and it has all the details, and that's the way it should be done. Okay, so these are the basic prohibitions of chametz. Now, how do we deal with chametz? How do we deal with it? So, the truth of the matter is, there is a mitzvah in the Torah which is not so well known and not so well appreciated. In other words, most people, when they think about chametz, they think that chametz is simply one of the prohibitions in the Torah, mitzvah lo sasa. However, there is also a positive mitzvah which pertains to getting rid of chametz. And if you look on page 1 here in the bottom, in Pasuk Tezvav, the Torah says, Shivas yomim matzos tochelu, that for 7 days you should eat matzos. Ach bayom harishon tashbisu se'or mibateichem. Okay, now here the Torah says a very interesting thing, which is very hard to understand. The Pasuk says, bayom harishon, which literally means on the first day, Tashbisu se'or mibateichem. The word tashbisu is an unusual word. It's unclear exactly what that word means. But the Masorah that we have is that the word tashbisu means that you have to in some way divest yourself of chametz. Okay? Tashbisu se'or mibateichem. Now if you look here, I have it underlined on the right side in the Targum Unkelus. Okay, so he says that Shivas Yomin Pata Techun Biram Pater Techun, you should eat matzah for 7 days. Biram, however, Biroma Kadma, on the first day, Tivatlun Chamiya Mibatechun. Tivatlun means you should nullify. You should nullify the chametz. That is the way the Targum Unkelus interprets the word Tashbisu, which, if we now plug that into the pasuk, would seem to mean that on the first day of Pesach, you have to get rid of your chametz. But we know that that's not true, because you have to get rid of your chametz in advance of Pesach. So here, the Gemara tells us, and it's quoted in Rashi, that in fact, when it says, Bayom HaRishon, Ach Bayom HaRishon does not mean literally on the first day of Pesach, but rather it means, Me'erev Yontif. It means Erev Yontif. The Kari Rishon Lefishahu Lefnei HaShiva, that the word Rishon means on the, is in this pasuk, is not to be interpreted the first day, but rather on the preceding day. In other words, on the day that precedes the Yontif, so there is a mitzvah, this is a positive mitzvah, it's a mitzvah saseh, that a person has to do tashbisu, that a person has to get rid of his chametz. Okay, so that means that on Erev Pesach, and aside from all the prohibitions, eat the chametz, you can't get hanah, you can't own it, these are all negatives. But there is also a positive mitzvah of tashbisu se'or mibateichem, that you have to do something on Erev Yontif to get rid of your chametz. Now, what do we do in order to fulfill this mitzvah? So basically, there are three things that we do in general with our chametz, and I'd like to explain why we do all three of them. Okay, the three things that we do with our chametz are mechira, bittul, and biur. Okay, there are three basic concepts that we do with our chametz. Number one is mechiras chametz, which is today commonly done. This was not the case in the times of the Gemara and even until probably a couple hundred years ago, because it used to be in the old world. We have to realize when it comes Pesach that until the modern age, getting rid of chametz wasn't such a big deal because they didn't have preservatives and there was no refrigeration. So therefore, chametz would not last. It's not like you had a pantry full of chametz. How would that be possible, right? You would just buy whatever you had, bread or things of that nature, and it wouldn't last for very long. So nobody had large collections of chametz, and nobody had, you know, Yerushalmi kugel stored in the freezer. Nobody had such things. They didn't have a freezer. You didn't have preservatives. So you couldn't keep things, you know, without refrigeration. You couldn't keep spaghetti in a box and it'll hold for months. You couldn't do any of those things. So therefore, getting rid of chametz was a much less of a deal, and the need to sell chametz was non-existent. The only mechiras chametz that we find is the Gemara speaks about the idea of a person selling his chametz to a non-Jew, meaning he sells it to him for good. Right? In other words, he goes to the non-Jew before Pesach and says, look, I have a loaf of bread, you know, I'll sell it to you. Okay, if you do that, that's simple. The mechiras chametz that we do today is entirely different. We once spoke about this. The mechiras chametz that we do today is what's called a harama. A harama means that it's a specifically designed formula to, for lack of a better way of saying it, to beat the system, right? So therefore, we sell chametz to a guy knowing full well that we plan on buying it back after Pesach. The reason, the need for this is very, very understandable in our times, because in our times you have tremendous amounts of chametz, and to get rid of all of it would not be so simple, right? Historically, as we once discussed, the inyan of mechiras chametz came about primarily in the 18th century when the Jews in Eastern Europe were relegated by the anti-Semitic governments in which they lived. They were banned from many, many businesses and many professions. A Jew could not be a doctor or lawyer, and they were relegated to certain undesirable forms of business. Like, for example, the money lending, collecting, which, you know, became infamous, was something that Jews were given not by choice, but because collecting debts, you know, on behalf of the wealthy was something that Jews were forced into. And also the ownership of taverns. The ownership of taverns, which was a very, very dangerous type of business because of the fact that people would get drunk and, you know, in an oppressed society in general, even the non-Jews were largely oppressed by the few people of the upper class. So therefore, you had a lot of angry people walking around. The person would come into a bar, get drunk, and the owner of the bar was very often at that person's mercy. So therefore, but when this became a Jewish profession, so the need for mechiras chametz became, the way we do it, became very prominent because of the fact that the one type of chametz that will hold, even in the old world, would be something that was made into either beer or liquor. That would hold. You don't need refrigeration, you don't need preservatives. That will hold for a long period of time. So because the need came about for that type of chametz to be disposed of, but it couldn't just be sold because that would destroy if it was sold for good, that would be the end of the business. So the need came to come up with some way that you could just get rid of the chametz for Pesach and not and get it back afterwards. So it's for this reason that if one looks in the Shulchan Aruch, if one looks in the Rishonim, and certainly in the Gemara, you find almost no mention of the mechiras chametz the way we do it. It's a much more recent development that's found extensively in even the Shulchan Aruch. There's just about no mention of it. It's only found in the later Achronim and in the Shaios and Tshuvos Sfarim. That's where it came about. That's where it came up. So we have the mechiras chametz. Now, what does mechiras chametz do? What does it accomplish? So as far as the three prohibitions of Pesach, obviously, mechiras chametz solves the problem of ownership. If you sell the chametz, you don't own it, right? The fact is that you're selling it in a roundabout way because you're selling it and you're going to buy it back after Pesach. So this is a formula that the Rabbanim came up with. As I say, the Rabbanim came up with in the relatively more recent time, the last couple hundred years. It's considered... It was controversial. It was always held to be somewhat controversial. For this reason, there are people that don't rely on this type of mechira for what is called chametz gomer. If something is totally pure chametz, like bread, cookies, cakes, pretzels, There are people that will not sell that because out of the concern that, well, this whole thing is essentially halachically based shtick. Right? It's like almost like a scam in a certain sense. Not really, but you know, it's a way of beating the system. So therefore there are those that are careful and don't do that, but most people will sell anything. Most people sell all of the chametz. I'm not saying one way or the other. If you see someone who doesn't and he only sells what's called taruvas chametz, he sells only chametz where it's mixed together with other things and it doesn't really have the amount of chametz in it, like for example ketchup or mustard or things like that, which are chametz, but there's not enough chametz in the bottle of ketchup that a person would consume it within the amount of time it takes to violate the isser. So therefore, those types of things are commonly sold. There are some people that don't sell chametz gomer, but as I say, many people do, and the consensus of the Rabbanim is that you're allowed to do that. So the mechiras chametz solves the problem of bal yirua. Okay, now, in addition to this, but this is, as I say, a recent development. Now, the Targum Onkelos said that another way to deal with chametz is the tashbisu, the Targum Onkelos said, tevatlon. Okay, tevatlon means the bittel of chametz. Okay, now the bittel of chametz has to be understood. The bittel of chametz refers to the nullification of chametz. The nullification of chametz is, we do this both at night after we check for chametz and in the morning after we burn the chametz, that a person says a little formula, a few lines that are in Aramaic. You can say it in any language you want. If you don't understand the Aramaic, it's better to say it in English. You can get the art scroll, the machzor, or whatever, they have it to translate in English, just say it that way. And that is a form of a person divesting themselves of the chametz. Now, what kind of thing is this? You just say a few magic words and all your chametz goes away, right? So the reason for this can be found in the Gemara, if you turn to page 4. So the Gemara tells us the following. The Gemara tells us that really the prohibition of chametz itself is peculiar. And the reason for that is, the Gemara says, 5 lines from the bottom of the page, that there are 2 things in the world that a person does not really own. But yet the Torah went ahead and made it artificially the possession of that person. What are these things? The Eruhain, these things are Bar Bishus Arabim, the Chametz Mishay Shosumala. The Gemara says there are 2 items. If a person makes a hole in the street, if a person digs a pothole in the middle of the street, and someone falls in or a car goes in and gets damaged, so the person who made that hole is liable to pay. If you did it maliciously, even if you didn't do it maliciously, you're liable to pay. Okay, that's what's called a bar b'shus harabim. Now it happens to be that the Torah, when the Torah speaks about this concept, the Torah says bal habar yishalim, that the owner of the pit, the owner of this hole has to pay. So you say, well, he doesn't own it. He made it in the middle of Miami Gardens Drive. I don't own that street. So the answer is, it's true you don't own it, but the Torah treated it as if you owned it. The Torah artificially, in order that you should pay for it, the Torah said, well, guess what? You are now the proud owner of this hole. Okay, if you make a hole in the street, even though you can't claim ownership, you can't go build a house on it, right? In other words, if you go dig, it would be a good idea, right? You go to a public street and dig out a hole and then say, oh, Torah said it's mine, so now I'm going to build a nice house. That you cannot do, but for the purpose of paying, it's considered yours. So too, when it comes to the ownership of chametz on Pesach, because chametz is prohibited from benefit, so essentially something that you can't benefit from is not considered yours, because the definition of ownership is that I exercise control over it. But if the Torah prohibits you from exercising any control over chametz, so then it's not yours. So if it's not yours, how then is it possible to violate the 3rd isser of ownership of chametz? It's impossible, because the 2nd prohibition of chametz is that you can't get benefit. The 3rd prohibition is that you can't own it. But the 2 are mutually exclusive, because if you can't get benefit, then by definition you don't own it. You can't do anything with it. So in what sense do you own it? So therefore, it comes out that really it should be that there would be that a person would not be over any iser for possessing chametz. Comes the Gemara, and the Gemara says that the Torah artificially placed it in your possession. That it's a unusual type of situation, that the Torah sort of went out of its way to say that you can't have chametz no matter what. And therefore, even if you say, well, you know, I can't do anything with it, it doesn't matter. The Torah placed it in the person's possession. That being said, if that's the case, so then, since it's a unique form of ownership, as such, a person, it doesn't take much to remove that ownership. Okay, and therefore, renouncing the ownership, which is what essentially what the bittul chametz is, when a person is mevatel his chametz, he's saying, don't give it to me, I don't want it. I don't want it. All my chametz should be nullified. Okay, so that in itself makes it that a person is free of all his chametz. Okay, so therefore the bittul chametz is a very, very important thing, because the Gemara tells us elsewhere, if you look on the previous page, on page 3, the Gemara tells us bittul chametz, the Gemara says, midaraisa bittul ba'alma sagule. The Gemara says that in order for a person to solve the problem of ownership of chametz on Pesach, all he really needs to do is to do bittul. That's all he needs to do, is to be mevatel his chametz, because, like we say, really you don't own the chametz. The Torah went ahead and put it in your possession. But because of this unique situation that the Torah put in your possession, the flip side is that if you just simply verbally renounce it, then it's not yours. So therefore, and that is enough. A person who said the bittul chametz really would not have any problem of bayira, bayimatzei, of ownership of chametz. Okay, so now, so this is, we'll get to that in a second. So therefore, this is the concept of the bittul chametz. As such, the bittul chametz is really a very, very important thing that a person has to say. And we know that the halacha tells us that the bittul chametz can only be said before the time of the full prohibition of chametz. Okay, so therefore it's essential that a person not forget to say the bittul chametz. You have to, it's a very important thing. And especially a person who goes away for yontif, so if you're home for yontif, so you take out your chametz to burn, so you're involved with it, so you say, alright, that's part of the process, you burn the chametz, and then you open up the machzor or whatever, and you say the thing you get in the mail, and you read the bittul chametz, and everyone who lives happily ever after. But if you're going away for Pesach, you're not doing that, because you're not burning your chametz, which we'll discuss in a minute, right? So then you're sitting in the hotel, or you're sitting on the plane, or whatever it is, getting a ride, you know, it's going to be another couple of hours till you arrive in Cancun, right? And now comes the time for bittul chametz. So a person has to remember to say it. You can't say the bittul chametz after the zman. If it's after the zman, you're in trouble. So a person has to remember to say it. And not only that, but a person can be in a different time zone. We're very common, right? A person goes to Los Angeles for, you know, California, whatever, Arizona, all these Pesach programs that you see in the papers, right? So that's, it's a 3-hour difference. So when it's the Zman here in Miami, it's 3 hours earlier where you are. But the thing is that the bittul chametz goes by where your chametz is, not by where you are. So therefore, you have to be careful to make sure that you say it in the time. This is a very important thing. The bittul chametz is crucial. Even though it's not, you know, by nature, we don't take things like that so seriously. But I just read a few lines, what's the big deal? But that's the most important few lines, other than Harei At Mekudeshes Li, right? That's probably the most important declaration a person makes in his life. And that one you make every year, right? This one, hopefully not the other one, but this one a person makes every year. Yes.
So how far in advance do you make it?
Yeah, okay, so how far in advance do you make it? So this ties in to the pasuk of Tashbisu, because the idea of bittul chametz really accomplishes two things. Number one is that it removes ownership, but number two, it's also a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Tashbisu. Now this mitzvah of Tashbisu, of divesting yourself of chametz, right, so is really on Erev Pesach. Is really on Erev Pesach, a person is supposed to do something to get rid of his chametz. Now, it happens to be in the Minchas Chinuch, one could see there is a very interesting discussion that the mitzvah of Tashbisu that we said that a person has to get rid of his chametz on Erev Pesach specifically, right? Ach bayom Arishon means on Erev Pesach, not the day before that, not the week before that, but on Erev Pesach.
Monday, this year,
right. Now, very often today, people, especially young children, you know, turn over their house for Pesach in advance. They don't wait till the last day. So, but the pasuk says that there's a mitzvah of tashbisu, that a person should fulfill this mitzvah on Erev Pesach. So, there's a question how this mitzvah is fulfilled. There are those that say that this mitzvah is a passive mitzvah, which means that the fulfillment of the mitzvah of tashbisu, you don't have to do something, but rather, as long as when Erev Pesach comes, you don't have chametz, so then, in effect, on Erev Pesach, you have been rid of all your chametz. So, even though you didn't do it, you know, today, but you're rid of your chametz, you haven't done anything. Or, you could say that if a person would say the bittul of chametz, so the bittul of chametz, even though that's not an act in and of itself, it's simply a renouncement of ownership, but that also would be a fulfillment of the mitzvah of tashbisu. However, there are those that say that the mitzvah of tashbisu requires a positive act. It requires the person to actually do something. So for this reason, the common practice is that even a person who has cleaned his house completely for Pesach leaves over chametz to burn on Erev Pesach. In other words, you say, what do I have to do this for? I turned over my house a week ago. So you'll say, so why do I don't want to have chametz in my house. So there is the minhag that when we do the bedikas chametz, which we'll discuss in a minute, when a person does the bedikas chametz, you put out the 10 pieces of bread, which you don't have to do that, it's a widely accepted minhag to do that, but the fact of the matter is, so you'll burn those 10 pieces. But the truth of the matter is that if those 10 pieces are very small, then burning them is not enough to fulfill the mitzvah of tashbisu, because this positive mitzvah of getting rid of your chametz on Erev Pesach, according to those who hold that it requires a physical act, so it also requires a shear. So therefore, it would require the shear of a kezias. It would require a person to have that amount of chametz. So if you simply put out 10 tiny pieces of chametz for the bedikas chametz, and you wrap it up and you burn it out of Pesach, it may not really be enough. Meaning, okay, you certainly want to have chametz in your house on Pesach, that's the biggest issue, but if you want to fulfill this mitzvah, so according to some opinions, according to the first opinion, that all you need to do is to be free from chametz without doing something positive, so then you have fulfilled that simply by not having any chametz on Erev Pesach. However, in other words, I am in a state of not having chametz, I fulfilled the mitzvah. However, according to the opinion that holds, you have to actually do something positive to get rid of your chametz, so then it would call for a person actually having a shear of chametz, meaning a kezias of chametz, and burning it. Okay, the question comes up, does a person who doesn't have chametz have to go out of his way to do this? Much in the same way, do we compare it, for example, to tzitzis? When it comes to the mitzvah of tzitzis, so we know technically, according to the Torah, the mitzvah of tzitzis only applies if a person has a four-cornered garment, and if you don't have one, you don't need tzitzis. Today, we don't have four-cornered garments, therefore, theoretically, a person can go his whole life without ever putting on tzitzis. But we know that the time-honored custom is that we go out of our way to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis by buying four-cornered garments and putting tzitzis on them and wearing them. Okay, so some say that the same thing applies to chametz on Erev Pesach. And therefore, even a person who got rid of all his chametz before Pesach should go out and buy some to burn it. Because by doing that, you'll say, what, why would that be necessary? I got rid of all my chametz, I'm just looking for trouble. Right, what, are you going to go buy chametz now? The answer is, but I want to fulfill this positive mitzvah. And according to some, the way to do it is to do a physical act of burning. So now, you say, what if I go away for Pesach? So people who go away for Pesach, that's right, so you rely on the opinions that hold that you don't need to do something, physical in that sense. But you just say the bittul, right? You must say, again, the main thing is that the bittul chametz you have to say. That's absolutely imperative that a person say it, and a person says it in time. Don't wait till the last minute. If you're finished with your chametz, say it earlier, right? Really, a person could say it even before burning the chametz. The only problem is that if you wait till, if you don't burn your chametz until afterwards, so then you are not fulfilling the mitzvah of tashbisu because of the fact that the chametz that you are burning you don't own. In other words, if you have, let's say, a piece of bread, and you say, all right, I don't want to take any chances, so as soon as I get up in the morning, crack of dawn, I'm going to say the bittul chametz. Fine, you could do that, 100%. You could do that. The only thing is that when you come to burn the bread that you have left over, it's not your bread. So you'll say, who cares? Well, as far as the prohibitions of Pesach, nobody cares. Good, you got rid of the chametz. But as far as the positive mitzvah of tashbisu sa'ami batechem, of getting rid of chametz from your house as a positive act that a person is supposed to do, it has to be your chametz. So therefore, the common practice in Klal Yisrael is that a person burns the chametz and then recites the bittul. That's the way it's done. It doesn't have to be done that way. In other words, if you don't want trouble, right, so then the truth of the matter is, if you really don't want trouble, they should be lighting the fires at the crack of dawn, right? And you know, whoever's gonna burn the chametz, go early, burn your chametz, say the bittul, and then the person many people go to work on Erev Pesach. Okay, so it's a challenge. You must remember to say this. This is much more important than counting sphira. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not trying to diminish, you know, people have 100 emails and alarms that go off during the period of sphira, reminding them to count sphira. It's a mitzvah, I'm not minimizing it, but the bittul chametz is something that that's crucial, that a person should say that, and a person should say it at the right time. So, you know, and the way we have it structured is that we delay it because, you know, the halacha is, even though you have to stop eating chametz at a certain point, but then you could continue to own chametz for another hour after that, and people very often wait to the very last minute to burn the chametz, and then they say the bittul, and if you're not careful, you're saying the bittul too late. And if you say it too late, it's not effective. So this is very important to realize that it's better to burn the chametz in the crack of dawn. Take the chametz and get rid of it. Say the bittul. Finish. That way you don't have any problems. Yes. So the minig is that we say the bittul the night before because for chametz only you're not aware of, right? The lo yadanale, right? The difference between the two bitulim, the day bittul really, the question is, if you say the day one, you really don't need to say it the night before. But nevertheless, they instituted that you should say, since at night you're doing bedikas chametz, looking for chametz that you're not aware of, so at that point you say the bittul for that. The reason why you don't say at that point the comprehensive bittul, in other words, the reason why the rabbi said to say the bittul at night after the bedikas chametz is because you may forget to do it in the day. However, it doesn't help, it's not so simple if you've forgotten the day and you only said it at night, because at night you only nullified chametz you weren't aware of. The chametz that you are aware of, it wouldn't help for. So, the truth is, if it ever happened, we'll see in a minute, it wouldn't be the biggest deal in our times because of other things that we do, but the fact of the matter is that the reason why we do what we do, in other words, you'll say, if bittul chametz is so important, just say it the night before, for crying out loud, right? Or say it in the morning. Why do you wait till after you burn your chametz? The whole reason we wait till after we burn the chametz is just so that we should be able to fulfill this mitzvah of tashbisu. The mitzvah of tashbisu, which most people are not aware of, is a mitzvah that says that you're supposed to do something active on Erev Pesach to get rid of your chametz. So that to fulfill that, we burn the chametz. But what ends up happening I've seen this with my own eyes. You can go crazy from this. You see people wait till the last minute, and then they take it and they throw in the lulav and who knows what, right? All kinds of religious items get thrown into the, and non-religious items get thrown into the fire, and everyone's sitting there taking pictures, and the kids are all throwing in all their things. And by the time it gets around to say the bittul chametz, it's too late. It's too late. So this is something that a person has to be mindful of. Now, so we do the mechiras chametz, we do the bittul chametz, we do the bir chametz. Now, the truth of the matter is, if you did all three of those things, really nothing could go wrong. And technically, if a person did not even say the bittul chametz, one could make the argument that it also shouldn't be a problem if he did mechiras chametz. Because since he sold his chametz, so what's the problem? So I didn't say the bittul. So what? But any chametz that I have is owned by a guy. So the reason why we don't rely on that is because if a person just did mechiras chametz, so there's two problems. Now, one problem is mechiras chametz for sure is not a fulfillment of tashbisu, right? Because the mitzvah of tashbisu means that you have to destroy your chametz. Selling your chametz to a guy in no way is any sort of destruction or nullification. In other words, one could argue that bittul chametz is considered tashbisu, but mechiras chametz is not. All you're doing is you don't have chametz, but you have not because you sold it, but you didn't do anything in any sort of act of destruction. So therefore, a person who did mechiras chametz should still do a bittul chametz and a bir chametz for that reason. Okay, but aside from that, there is also the question in some people's minds that the mechiras chametz might be somewhat questionable. So to cover all the bases, just to play it safe, that there shouldn't be any issue of ownership of chametz on Pesach, so we do the mechiras chametz and the bittul chametz. Now, you could go the other way and say, well, if I do the bittul chametz, why must I sell my chametz to a guy? If I renounced all the ownership, then even if I have it, but I renounced my ownership. So the answer to this is the fact that the Chazal were concerned that a person might not say the bittul chametz wholeheartedly. If a person has a large supply of chametz in his house, it's not so easy to say it. You know, if you know you have a lot of chametz, I think from experience one knows this, that even when you say the bittul chametz, well, you feel a little uncomfortable. You say, I have all this chametz sitting in my house, right? Are you renouncing your ownership? It's all sitting locked up in my house, right? But the fact, because I sold it to a guy. Okay, so, out of the concern that a person might not do the bittul with a full heart, therefore we do the mechira. But really, they both cover the same point, and that is that a person should not be violating the prohibition of ownership of chametz on Pesach. Okay, now, I just want to point out one thing which comes up a lot, and that is that there are certain ways of getting rid of chametz that are not really considered getting rid of chametz. And the very, very common problem in all the urban cities today is with the garbage collection. Okay, the collection of garbage this year, Erev Pesach, is Monday, which is the day they collect the garbage in this neighborhood. Okay, but very often they will come after the Zman to collect the garbage. If you're fortunate enough that they come early, you have no problem. But what happens, and it happened last year, that they didn't come Erev Pesach to collect the chametz, to collect the garbage, on my street until about 2 hours before Yontif.
It's sold.
So you say it's sold. Okay, but the problem is like this. So it's true. You're not going to... technically, that chametz is sold, even though it's wrapped in garbage bags and no guy is ever going to eat it, but he agreed to buy it. It's his. However, that's not good enough because you cannot have chametz in your possession that's accessible to you. And even if you sold it to a guy. In other words, if a person, theoretically you could argue that if you sell your chametz to a guy, you have to clean your house for Pesach. Right? What do you clean your house for Pesach? What's the problem? There's chametz lying around. It's all his. What's the problem? Right? So the obvious answer to that is, because that's true as far as ownership. If you sold your chametz to a guy, you don't have to clean your house for Pesach if the only prohibition was owning chametz. But there's also the major prohibition of eating chametz. And therefore, if you have chametz around, accessible, that's a problem. So therefore, a person who retains chametz in his house has to put it away. You need a mechitza, the Gemara says. There has to be something surrounding it, blocking it off, so that the person knows not to take it. Now, that being the case, you say, well, if I put it in the garbage, there's no chance that I'm going to go eat it. But according to the dictate of the halacha, that's not good enough. That's not good enough because you still have it and it's still accessible. It's not locked up. It's in the pail. So therefore, the isser of having accessible chametz, it's not an isser d'oraisa. It's not a problem of bayirah bayimatzeh because, as you say, the chametz has been sold and it's been nullified. There's no problem. But you still did not accomplish what the chachamim wanted when they instituted bedikas chametz. Because the famous bedikas chametz that we do the night before Pesach is geared not towards ownership of chametz, but it's geared towards the prohibition of eating chametz. So to that end, you have to get rid of all the chametz before Pesach. And whatever you're going to do, if you do a mechira, has to be locked up and put away. So if a person has it in his garbage pail, many, many poskim have said that that's just not good enough. So what do you do in a situation like that? This is not a simple thing. So what do you do? So I don't want to cause trouble, but basically, you could ask a rav. That would be the first thing. So don't go by what I say, right? No. You can ask the rav Mishul and see what he says. But I will tell you that what's that?
That's a throwaway.
Right. So what some people will say, which would not work here, But in New York, this is what people do, is they take, because in New York they still have the archaic institution of a garbage man, right, that a person actually picks up the garbage and puts it in the truck, which is unheard of here, right? So what they say to do is, if you take don't leave the bags in your pail, but rather put them on the curbside, which is not your land. In other words, the curbside is Rishus HaRabim, it's public property, and leave it there, and therefore it's out of your possession. It's not in your possession. So when they come to pick up the garbage, they're just going to pick up the bag and throw it in the garbage. Now that doesn't work here, because they won't take that garbage.
You don't own
the. Okay, so the question is, do you own the pail? So that's what some people say, if in fact that's true, so then that could be that's good enough. The swell is not yours. I understand. The swell is not yours. But if the pail is yours and it's in your pail on the swell, then you have a problem, right? So therefore,
the city gives
it to you. Okay. That's what I heard. That's what I heard people say. Okay. What? I'm sorry. Right. It'll be gone in 2 minutes. Right. So you call Sally Heyman to the rescue and see if she'll come early in the morning to pick up the chametz. Maybe she will. Maybe she'll send her chevra out there. The fact of the matter is that this is something that a person, that if you don't have much, you could just go put it in some municipal pail. But if you have a lot, which is very often the case, okay, if you say if the bins are not yours, then that could very well be that's good. If you pour bleach on it, that may render it inedible, that would be good too. That would also be good, because you made it nifsed mechilas kelev. That would be something that a person could do as well. Yes. Yes.
Where
you
can dump the garbage at
Shari,
the city, or
Sally Heyman
brings a big dumpster or a garbage truck,
where
you can bring it there.
You could, is there such a place?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So that. Okay. If that's true.
I don't think she's doing it this year, but it's a
okay. Okay. So there you have it. I don't know. A person just has to be mindful of this. So just to review, in other words, a lot of what we said today are things that are well-known, dvarim pshutim, but it's just kedai to review. In other words, the three surim of Pesach, the prohibition of eating, that's the most severe, the prohibition of hanor, the prohibition of ownership, the three ways that we deal with chametz is mechira, bittul, and beer, right? We do all three. We sell the chametz, we nullify the chametz, and we also do some act on Erev Pesach of destruction of chametz, and you'll say, why is that necessary if you did the mechira and you did the bittul? So what possibly could go wrong? So the answer is nothing, except that the positive mitzvah of tashbisu there are those that hold that bittul, even though the Targum says that the word tashbisu means to be mevatel it, to nullify it, but not everybody agrees with that. And therefore there are people that say that that's not good enough, you have to do a physical act of destruction, not just renouncement of ownership, but you have to actually destroy it. So therefore we do beer chametz on Erev Pesach, which is something that sometimes could be, you know, a person says, I don't want to have any chametz lying around. Why am I burning chametz at Erev Pesach? I got rid of my chametz a week ago. This is the answer. The answer, there are those that even go out and get chametz in order to fulfill this mitzvah. I'm not saying you have to go that far. And theoretically, if a person is worried that they're not going to get around to burning the chametz, then okay, what could you do? So you won't do it, and you rely on the opinions that hold that the bittul is enough for to fulfill the mitzvah of tashbisu. But this mitzvah of tashbisu, sa'armi bateichem, is a specific mitzvah that applies. It's not well known. This is a mitzvah in the Torah. It's one of the 613 mitzvahs that applies on Erev Pesach, and a person should, in one way or another, take that into account while being mindful of the times and make sure that he burns the chametz in the proper time. I wish everyone a chag kashrus sameach.